Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, another New Jersey traffic jam purposely caused by government officials. Yes, we'll check in with Jersey City Mayor Steve Fulop on day one of Pulaski Skyway repairs, day one of 2 years of no inbound Skyway. Also, remembering the life and work of James Baldwin today, turns 90, would have turned 90 this year, with Jamaica Kincaid and others, the new shadows in Central Park, thank the new high-rises, and we'll meet one of Mayor de Blasio's most intriguing appointees, Steve Banks, famous for suing the city on behalf of the poor as head of the Legal Aid Society. Now he is running HRA, the agency that serves the poor. We'll meet Steve Banks today. But let's begin with some politics. Most of the speculation about the midterm congressional elections this fall asks, what if the Republicans take the Senate? Will President Obama be able to accomplish anything in his final 2 years in office? But there is an opposite scenario, unlikely but not impossible. What if the Democrats take back the House? As it happens, a congressman from Long Island is in charge of trying to make that happen. He is Democrat Steve Israel, whose North Shore district runs from about Whitestone, Queens to Commack and Northport. He also made some news on CNN yesterday by saying, not all Republicans are racist. Steve Israel is chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, trying to win the majority for the Democrats in the House. And Congressman Israel, good morning. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on, Brian.
Can we revisit that CNN moment yesterday first?
Sure.
With Candy Crowley? I happened to be watching, and I was a little startled to hear you put it that way, which implies you think most Republicans are racist, do you?
No, in fact, it was the opposite. I was responding to Candy's question on whether Republican failure to pass an immigration bill was somehow fueled by racism, and I said, "No, I do not believe that."
Not all racist.
Look, we've got to focus not on ascribing motives but developing solutions. 67 Republicans and Democrats in the Senate have passed comprehensive immigration reform. They did it because they know that it reduces deficits by nearly $1 trillion. They did it because they know it's fair and smart for the economy. And there's a lot of frustration by my constituents, by the American people, that House Republicans will not even allow a vote on comprehensive immigration reform. I mean, you can vote yes, you can vote no, you can have whatever motive you want, but at least allow a vote on this bill and let's move the country forward and pass this comprehensive immigration bill.
A poll number about Obamacare that came up on that show also had a racial dimension. Only 28% of whites support it. Black and Latino support is much higher. Analyst Ron Brownstein said that tells him that whites tend to see it as a transfer program, a welfare program. So with all the mandates and subsidies, is it wrong to see the Affordable Care Act as a government program to take money from some Americans to give it to others?
You know, if you're a woman with breast cancer and now your insurance company must provide you with coverage, that's important. If you are a child up to the age of 26 and you're now able to remain on your parents' plan, that's important. And that cuts across the whole country. That's important no matter whether you're one of my constituents or anywhere you live. And so I think the Republicans have tried to repeal the Affordable Care Act now going on 60 times. We understand their position. It's time to move on. What we need to do is fix and improve the Affordable Care Act rather than obsessing on the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, which, by the way, would force women to pay 50% more than men for health costs if the Affordable Care Act is repealed. I'll also add that between 60 and 70% of Americans do not want the Affordable Care Act repealed. They want it fixed and improved. So let's work together on a bipartisan basis to make fixes and improvements without gutting the law and going back to the days when insurance companies had free reign over people's health care rights.
Democratic listeners, you be the strategist. Swing voters, tell Steve Israel why the Democrats aren't closing the deal. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Democrats, are you happy or frustrated with how your party fights for its values and interests? You be the strategist to take back the House. We have a few swing districts around here, not too many. So most of you who are Democrats live in safe Democratic congressional districts. So talk to Steve Israel about how they can get the job done elsewhere, 212-433-9692. And swing voters, if the Democrats speak for you sometimes, when do they and when do they not? We have some swing districts around here, a few in New Jersey, the Michael Grimm District and Staten Island and Brooklyn, 212-433-9692. For Queens and Long Island, Congressman Steve Israel, head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, 212-433-9692. Congressman, is Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act your biggest obstacle this year in trying to take back the House? I heard the arguments you were making for it a minute ago, but is this the Obamacare election?
No, I don't believe so. This is going to be the House Republican election. Remember, this is a group of people that shut down the federal government. They played with the full faith and credit of the United States government and downgraded our credit. They took a year to pass the Violence Against Women Act. They will not pass immigration reform. They have not even passed legislation to pay a woman the same as a man for equal work. They just passed a budget that raises taxes $2,000 on middle-class families in order to effectuate a tax cut of $87,000 on people earning over $1 million. This is going to be a referendum on a Republican Congress that doesn't have the backs of the middle class but continues to stack the decks for the special interests that has failed America's middle class. That's what the next 7 months will be about.
The Republican Congress has like single-digit approval ratings, so much lower than the president's approval. I've heard it characterized as the lowest congressional approval rating since they started doing polls in the United States. And it's been like that for a few years. So why haven't you had more success yet in capitalizing on that for a Democratic sweep of swing districts like the Republicans had in 2010?
Well, actually, Brian, we picked up a net of 8 seats in 2012 that no pundit and no prognosticator predicted we would. In 2012, we were told we would lose seats. In fact, we picked up a net of 8 seats, and we did it by recruiting and running candidates who were about solutions, not about ideology, about solutions, who ran like mayors in their districts. And we are emulating the same strategy. We've reached out across the country. We're pushing into districts that are just right of center. Look, we have two districts in Arkansas in play right now. Who would have predicted that? We need 17 seats to win the majority, and everything that is within our control, that is the mobilization, the recruiting, the resources, the message, we are exceeding and, in fact, surpassing expectations. We need 17 seats. We've got between 50 and 55 Republican seats in play. We have to defend between 20 and 25 of our Democratic incumbents, and we're doing all this against the backdrop, as you say, of the most unpopular Republican Congress in the history of measuring popularity in polls.
Let's take a call from Jeremy in Brooklyn, who is watching a congressional race, let's say far from Court Street. Jeremy, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Congressman Israel.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Yes, calling about my home state of North Dakota, where we've got a real good shot at having a Democrat take the position again, which was held by Democrats for something like 30 years, only until 2010. When we lost that to Republicans. And now there is a good candidate. His name is George Sinner Jr., who's the son of the former governor of North Dakota, who's running against the incumbent Republican, Kevin Cramer, who's not well-liked in the state, something only like 40% approval rate, even in a state like North Dakota, which leans a bit conservative. So I think that would be an excellent investment.
Jeremy, maybe you can do a little cultural translation for us. As someone who comes from North Dakota, now lives in Brooklyn, how do you run a Democrat in North Dakota and win? And would it be in a way that a lot of people in Brooklyn wouldn't get?
Well, I don't think so. You have to be obviously a moderate on social issues. If you can also be a moderate on the business front, be a supporter of an all-of-the-above strategy for energy development, for example, North Dakota being a primary energy producer, and be somebody who can be effective on farm and ag legislation, then you've got a winning ticket for Democrats in a place like North Dakota.
If I may, Jeremy, you know, as you know, North Dakota had a Democratic representative not very long ago, and George Sinner is just terrific. It is a tough Democratic demography. It's about 41%, I believe, Democratic performance. But, you know, you are right, a solutions-oriented Democrat, someone who wakes up every morning thinking about how you can improve the economy for middle-class families, somebody who understands ag issues, I think can win that race. And George Sinner, who's got a long and proud legacy of problem-solving from his family in North Dakota, is a terrific candidate. And, in fact, I talked to George just last week.
Do you advise, and Jeremy, thanks for your call, do you advise your Democratic candidates around the country in places like North Dakota and wherever to embrace and praise Obamacare, as you did a minute ago, or distance themselves from it, or just does it depend on the district?
No, we advise our candidates to be a good fit for their district. We advise our candidates to be about solutions. We advise our candidates to talk about issues and focus on their priorities. We also advise them to talk about how this Republican majority in the United States Congress has turned its back on constituents, whether you're living in North Dakota. Remember how long it took them to pass a farm bill? I mean, it took them forever to pass a farm bill. That's you know, example A in a dysfunctional Republican Congress that doesn't serve its constituents very well at all.
Let's take a call, I think, also supporting the idea of using Obamacare in the election. Ben in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ben.
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Congressman.
Hi, Ben.
I don't understand why the Democrats aren't out everywhere touting the major victory. The shift in attitude that passing the Affordable Care Act, you know, we can work on the substance. And like you said, that is the goal. But it's such a victory to see the American people address the issue, even if it's symbolic, even if we still need, you know, even if there are still major problems. This needs to be hammered home everywhere that the system that we had was insulting for a country that's so wealthy. And now we've begun to address it. How could we run from it when we haven't even addressed some of the most serious issues?
Well, Dan, you know, if we do this right, it's going to be Republicans who are going to be running from their obsession with repeal. We're going on offense. We've got to be aggressive and ask Republicans how they can defend looking a woman in the eyes and saying, you've been diagnosed with breast cancer, and we're going to force you back to the day where you paid an insurance company a premium, and then the insurance company could say that your breast cancer was a pre-existing condition, so they don't cover it. How could you say to a woman that under the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, their costs are going to be 50% higher than a man's? How can you say to a senior citizen that under the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, the prescription drug donut hole is reopened and they get a $1,200 bill? We're going to make these Republicans run from the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, right, which they have tried to do 60 times, and we will not allow them to repeal their repeal. They can't run away from repeal. They've done it 60 times.
All right. But Ben and Congressman, I think you're both preaching to the choir here, talking to each other on that. Let's get what I think is going to be an example of some of the resistance that your Democratic candidates around the country have to face. This is Tom calling in as from the North Shore of Long Island. So, Tom, are you in Congressman Israel's district?
I am in Congressman Israel's district, and I have visited his office in Washington to discuss the Affordable Care Act with him. And it makes my blood boil so much that I have 180 employees in the North Shore and some in Queens who, when they actually find out the substance of how the working poor are going to have to overpay for less coverage, and that I have to be the Grinch that stole Christmas, and his office doesn't even want to deal with the issues. They talk about the 5 points on the outside, but they don't talk about the substance of subsidizing the poor on the backs of the working poor. Coverages are being drastically reduced everywhere, and nobody wants to talk about that. This is an atrociously designed program that everybody knows about it, and they need to tell the truth on it.
Congressman, go ahead and engage. That's
sure,
the perception.
Tom, I'm sorry. Refresh my memory. When were you into my office, and when did we meet? I want to make sure that I have it in the proper context.
In November with the National Restaurant Association.
Okay, thank you. Tom, look, as I'm sure we discussed at our meeting, we have to take a look at each case separately, and my obligation is to work with you to try and improve something that may not suit you. Now, I travel throughout my congressional district. I travel from the Whitestone Bridge to the Nisquag River in Smithtown, and I have to tell you that there are some who have complaints like yours. There are some, actually, some constituents have said, Congressman, I got better coverage at a lower rate. Thank you for protecting me as a woman. I had breast cancer. My insurance company canceled me when I had breast cancer. Now I don't have that worry. And so we have an obligation as Americans, when something goes wrong, not to figure out who you blame, but to work together to figure out how we fix it.
And you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
What's the baby, Tom? Tom, what's the baby?
The baby is a working system that allowed me previously to give Blue Cross and Blue Shield to my managers. Now the price is so unaffordable, and I have to go to a plan that has a $6,000 deductible for 9.5% of their gross salary for 60-40% coinsurance. It's an atrocious program.
Why would that be happening, Congressman? Do you get it?
Well, one of the issues that I do have is people have very specific situations, very specific policies, and rather than engaging in kind of a template answer, I want to work with Tom, figure out exactly what his experience is, and see if there's a way that we can resolve it.
So should he get in touch?
Tom,
we're not going to continue this on the air, but should he get
in? We met before. We met in November with the Restaurant Association. I'm happy to have another conversation with you so we can delve into your specific circumstances.
So, Tom, you call his office. You tell him we had this conversation on the Brian Lehrer Show, and then after the meeting, you call us back, okay?
I will follow through. Thank you very much,
okay.
Brian,
for
facilitating it.
Thank you very much. Congressman Steve Israel from the North Shore District, running from about the Whitestone Bridge out to about Comac and out there to the water past the Suffolk Line.
Whitestone Bridge to the Nisquag River in Smithtown.
There you go. 212-433-WNYC. As Congressman Israel is running the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee this year, meaning his job is to try to take back a majority for the Democrats in the House. Let's talk about money. The New York Times this weekend had an article on the impact of big spending conservatives in support of Republican Senate candidates. And listen to this paragraph about, quote, the critical role that outside conservative groups are playing as Republicans go on offense to try to retake the Senate as you're trying to retake the House. This says in state after state, organizations like Americans for Prosperity, the nonprofit linked to the conservative billionaires, the Koch brothers, kept Democrats on the defensive with a barrage of negative ads, while establishment-backed Republican candidates raise money and navigate their way through primaries. Then it gives an example of Alaska, where it says the Democratic incumbent, Senator Mark Begich, spent about as much money as he raised during the first 3 months of the year, while Dan Sullivan, a Republican candidate and former state attorney general, increased his fundraising and substantially narrowed Mr. Begich's advantage in cash on hand, unquote. So my question for you about all that is there any Democratic equivalent to what they're doing in the Senate trying to take back the House? Or do you not have the equivalent wealthy supporters to put Republican incumbents back on their heels like that with outside deep Democratic pockets?
You know, the middle class got a 1-2 punch over the past few years. One was the Supreme Court Citizens United decision, which enables these very powerful and well-funded secret super PACs to raise money and spend it in an unlimited way, beaming into congressional districts to try and buy elections, even though many of these super PACs don't even know where these districts are. The second was the McCutcheon decision that came from the Supreme Court just 2 weeks ago, which lifted the aggregate caps on giving. The last thing in the world that American politics needs right now is more money in American politics. Now, I may not like the rules that have been imposed on the system, but we will play by the rules that have been imposed on the system. And then when we are back in the majority, we will change the rules and we will pass fundamental and profoundly transformative campaign finance reform.
So you don't have the current individuals, let's say Koch brother equivalent, because everybody, you know, the media casually says, oh, like George Soros for the Democrats and the Koch brothers for the Republicans. But is it not really equivalent? Are there not the Democratic deep pockets to go out and do what the Koch brothers do for the Republicans in support of Democrats trying to take back the House?
There is something called the House Majority PAC, which does raise money and support Democratic candidates throughout the country, the Democratic House candidates throughout the country. It is called the House Majority PAC.
Elaine and Patchogue, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Elaine.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. What about Tom Steret? The Steret brothers, the $100 million man, liberal, extremist for global warming. Come on, Steve Israel. I find the Democrat Party to be so racist, anti-Hispanic. The way they treated Alberto Gonzalez, Attorney General for Bush, they brutalized him. Every liberal, extremist, crazy Democrat. In fact, the whole Democrat Party's extremists, nut jobs.
So, Elaine, thank you.
Elaine, I'll put you down as undecided.
Yeah, that's right. But there's so much talk radio out there where that's the dominant chatter, and there's no equivalent liberal talk radio out there across the heartland. How do you fight that?
You know, you fight it with facts. Look, there are people on both. I formed something called the House Center Aisle Caucus. It was a group of 50 Democrats and Republicans who would meet together, not to focus on what separates us, but to focus on where we can agree. And it was one of the most refreshing and liberating experiences that I've ever had as a member of Congress. And so rather than engaging in the kind of hyperbole and the vilification that we too often hear, I think it's more important for us to figure out solutions. Democrats and Republicans, Brian, fact is we're going to agree about 75% of the time. It's probably because some people choose to become Democrats and some people choose to become Republicans. The thing is this, we agree on the 25% that's left. And if we would just focus on the 25% where we can agree and not paralyze ourselves on the 75% where we don't agree, the country would be 100% better off. And that's why we need to focus on solutions and common ground and middle ground.
Nathan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Great conversation. I wanted to say that I wish the National Democrats would be spending more time focusing on state elections. In my home state of Michigan right now, we have a state government that's entirely controlled by Republicans from the governor all the way down, and we've seen right to work come in. We've seen reproductive rights just butchered, and it's at this state level, I think that the the right is kind of trying to take a back door to leadership into the government, and I think we should be paying more attention to that.
How about the state level?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. No, I was just asking, how about the state level? That's not your job as head of the Congressional Campaign Committee, but maybe that's where, you know, the most possibility is in this particular election cycle.
You've got to build out infrastructure at every level, state elections and municipal, town elections, and the federal landscape. And in building out elections and building out campaigns, you have to make sure that they're based on, again, solutions and bringing people together, supporting the middle class. Every election, I don't care whether it's a local election, state election, or national election, Brian, every election is about one thing: who's got your back, whose side you're on. And I think the next seven months is going to focus on that fundamental question: who's got your back? The Republicans last week, before we broke for district work period, they passed a budget that absolutely turns its back on the middle class in order to enrich the already rich. Most Americans disagree with those priorities or lack of priorities, and that's what this election is going to be about. And I think elections throughout different levels of government will be about.
Last question, and I think him bringing up the state or elections at the state level is really important. How much is redistricting after the 2010 census an immovable object that you'll never get over for a House majority until the census in 2020? More Americans voted Democratic for Congress in 2012, I don't have to tell you, than voted Republican. But the way the districts got drawn the year before, Republicans still maintain their comfortable majority in House seats. And that's because there was a Republican sweep in 2010, that backlash to Obamacare and the stimulus and the TARP. And it was at the state level where they got so many governors and so many majorities in state legislatures, which is where the redistricting is done, that then the congressional districts were drawn to Republican favor, which lasts for 10 years until the next sentence. So is that actually a House majority deal breaker? You're stuck until the 2020 census?
No, it's not. Redistricting actually took, when you analyze it, maybe 5 to 7 seats, Democratic seats, out of play.
Only 5 to 7?
50 to 55 Republican seats that will be in play. And we need 17.
Needing 17 seats to take back the House, the Democratic Party, led in that quest by Long Island and Queens Congressman Steve Israel, head of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Brian.
I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we will meet one of Mayor de Blasio's most intriguing appointees, Steve Banks, famous for suing the city on behalf of the poor as head of the Legal Aid Society. Now he is running HRA, the agency that serves the poor. We'll see if he's making new friends among defense attorneys. Stay with us.